This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In the new movie Tyson, Mike Tyson reflects on a mystery that many people have wondered about. Who is he really? How did he become such a damaged man and such a great boxer? Tyson became the youngest heavyweight champion in 1986 when he was 20 years old. The following year, he became the first heavyweight to own all three major belts at the same time. The movie is a long monologue, edited from interviews with the film's director, James Toback. Tyson's monologue is occasionally intercut with fight excerpts and interviews from his boxing career.
My mission is to go and destroy and not to let anything get involved. You get punched, you get hurt. I refuse to be hurt, knocked down, and knocked out. I can't lose. I refuse to lose.
That's huge. Right hand. That should be it. And down goes.
I always try to aim through the back of my opponent's head, fantasize my punch going through them and in and out the back of the head. It sounds like a brutal sport, but it's just a technique. It's just an art. And when people hear you talk in this particular fashion, they think of you as some brutal monster, but it's all about the skill, the speed, the accuracy. And that's basically what I made my style after.
Our film critic David Edelstein described the movie Tyson as an enthralling documentary, an 88-minute stream of consciousness monologue that makes you sympathize, wince, cringe, makes you wonder how a man who seemed for all the world an unrepented thug, an ear-biter, a date rapist, could turn out to be so gentle and reflective. Not a monster, but a damaged everyman. In a few minutes, we'll meet the film's director, James Toback, but first we're going to talk about Tyson's place in boxing with Elmer Smith, who covered Tyson from 83 to 89 as a sports writer and columnist. Smith writes for the Philadelphia Daily News, where he's a columnist and member of the editorial board. Elmer Smith, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Now, you pointed out in one of your columns that Tyson's first 15 fights lasted a total of 23 rounds because he knocked out all of his opponents so early in the fights. What made him such a great boxer?
Well, at that stage, I don't know that he was as much a great boxer as he was a fighting spirit with a tremendous punch. But I think the thing that made him so successful was an utter killer instinct. He would press to the task immediately, and coming into the ring, he believed that he was a better man than the opponent that he was facing, and he was driven by that belief.
Well, you quoted some of the things he said to you in interviews early on. He said that he dreamed of hitting a man in the nose hard enough to drive the bone into his brain and kill him.
Right.
He said he was going to cripple this one or break that one's back. Was that a typical boxer talk?
No, that's not typical boxer talk. In fact, the way boxing historically and traditionally has been sort of marketed is to present the fighter as sort of the Kid Galahad, the sort of person who is a fierce competitor in the ring, just a tiger turned loose. But outside the ring, he's somebody that you would introduce your daughter and maybe let him take her to the prom. He turned that on its head and created this sort of malevolent figure that got to be the legend of Mike Tyson. I think he did it for in part to intimidate his opponents, but in part, I think there's a dark side of him, sort of saw himself that way.
Well, how did you react as a journalist when he would say these things to you?
Oh, it's like listening to some of the stuff you hear from Al Qaeda. You know, we will bury you. We will. It may reflect their mood at the moment, but it's so far disconnected from the reality of what's getting ready to happen in a ring. What happens in a ring has very little to do with anger. Boxing is a technical sport, and it has to be sort of conducted that way to be done successfully. A fight is a very difficult and aerobic kind of a physical exercise. 3 minutes into each round, the average street fight lasts longer than a round. Doesn't last as long as a round of boxing. Anger won't sustain you through that.
I think one of the reasons why Tyson was so popular and everybody knows his name is not just his skill as a boxer, but his personal story, too.
Yes.
When he was 13, he was arrested for robbing a woman. He confesses in the movie that he did steal, but he says he didn't rob this woman.
Right.
But he was arrested and sent to, you know, juvenile hall. And then before he was done serving his time, he was basically adopted by the famous trainer Customato, who became his legal guardian and his trainer and changed his life. Can you talk a little bit about what you think Customato did for Mike Tyson as a person and as a boxer?
He did what trainers do, especially first trainers for most fighters. A kid comes into a gym because somebody's been stealing his lunch money or confronting him in school. He's been beaten up, intimidated. He goes to somebody, says you need to go to the gym. He runs into an old guy with a few Q-tips behind his ears and his arms and hands all gnarled, and he tells him what happened, and the guy says, kid, this is what you have to do. When you see him again, stand right in front of him. When he opens his mouth, punch him in the middle of his stomach. Don't hit him in the face. And when he doubles over, then you can finish him off. The kid comes back to the gym a day later, and it worked exactly as the old man said, and he is suddenly in this old man's sway. It's not an uncommon story. It is just that story to a greater degree in the case of Customato, because Cus tended to take people who were at their extremity, kids who were in reform schools, who were disconnected from families, if they had families before Mike Tyson. It was Jose Torres, who he tutored on to the light heavyweight championship of the world. Before that, of course, the great Floyd Patterson, who got the same way. So there's nothing that unusual about this relationship between him and that first trainer, except that he lived with this trainer. His whole life became defined by the pursuit of excellence in boxing.
What was it like to cover Tyson early on, when he was knocking out opponent after opponent, and he was still, what, like in his late teens, probably?
Well, you know, when you you can tell when there's a phenomenon in a nascent stage, you can sort of see that this is getting ready to be something. So one of the ways that you cover that is to sort of project forward to what this is getting ready to be. That's a pitfall sometimes for a writer, because you can get sort of caught up in the sort of pre-hype. But even with all your efforts to avoid that, Tyson is such a magnetic figure in the early part of that. He was soft-spoken. He was a student of the game. I mean, we've spent our time writing about and learning about and understanding boxing. He had a clearer understanding of the nuts and bolts of boxing than most of us who were covering it. So it was very beguiling to see this novice who could describe the punch that Harry Greb threw in a certain fight 60 years earlier. So it was a phenomenon in the making. You could see that it was going to be something. You didn't know how long it was going to go before he ran into that real challenge, but it was that kind of a situation.
Elmer Smith is a columnist with the Philadelphia Daily News. We'll talk with him again later in the show. Let's get back to our interview with former sports writer Elmer Smith, who covered Tyson's career from 83 to 89. Smith is now a columnist with the Philadelphia Daily News, where he's also a member of the editorial board. Earlier, we talked about what made Tyson a great boxer. We also wanted Smith's take on some of the controversies surrounding Tyson's life. The character issues became very extreme later in his career, when his then-wife, Robin Givens, accused him of abusing her. And then there was the rape charges from Desiree Washington, who at the time of the incident was a contestant for Miss Black America. Mm-hmm. She accused him of rape. He was convicted, served 3 years in prison. He was convicted of rape and deviant sexual acts. Mm-hmm. So you were no longer covering boxing at the time of his trial, but you were still following it very closely.
Yes.
In the movie Tyson, we get Tyson's version of the story, which is, you know, that he was wronged.
Right.
That he did not rape her. He doesn't say they didn't have sex, but he does say he did not rape her.
Right.
And I'm wondering, what you saw the movie, mm-hmm. What would you like to add to what was said? Are we missing any perspective, do you think, his point of view?
He sort of cast the situation in terms of his own victimization. So he felt that he was a victim. We didn't really so much in the movie get his side of the story, except that he declared his innocence and her villainy, that that she was somebody who, for reasons that he couldn't articulate or didn't attempt to, just defamed him for God knows what reason. He doesn't get into that. He characterizes her in very clear and profane terms, and again, sort of portrays himself as a victim. There was a lot of feeling in America on both sides of that issue, but I don't know of anything that I've learned since or during that time that would cause me to take issue with the verdict. there's been a lot of feeling on both sides of the issue, but it's largely emotional in terms of what we actually know about the cases, what was presented before that jury. They made their decision, and I just don't have any information that would cause me to second guess that.
And in not second guessing it, are you saying that he always had problems with women, or that, you know, he doesn't understand the line of appropriate sexual behavior? Or is that kind of beyond what you can say as a columnist?
Well, I could point to what his defense was at the time. I thought he was really ill-served by the defense. Essentially, what the defense said was that this young woman could not have been as innocent as she wanted to portray herself because, quote-unquote, everybody knows what kind of guy Mike Tyson is. That was his defense at the time. I think that says...
So the premise is she should have known better. It's
exactly.
Her fault.
She should have known better. It was her fault. Everybody knows what kind of guy Mike Tyson is. They presented him as a monster for their own purposes. Again, I don't know of anything outside of the context of that trial that I could add to that.
James Toback said that Tyson's attorney in that case was basically a tax lawyer,
right,
who was appointed, who was chosen for him by Don King,
yes,
the infamous manager who was managing Tyson at the time. And that sounds kind of crazy.
That is kind of crazy. It was noted at the time. I mean, there were a number of the criminal defense attorneys with great reputations who would gladly have taken that case, any kind of date rape case, despite the fact that there was medical evidence essentially saying that the injuries that that they saw were inconsistent with consensual sex. Even with that, the date rapes are a hard win for a prosecutor. And I think to have chosen a seasoned veteran defense attorney would have been a much smarter move. I have no idea why they landed on this guy.
My guest is Philadelphia Daily News columnist and former sports writer Elmer Smith, who covered Mike Tyson's career. We'll talk more about Tyson and the new documentary Tyson after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Philadelphia Daily News columnist and former sports writer Elmer Smith, who covered Tyson's boxing career. We're talking about Tyson, the new documentary about him, and the controversies that have surrounded him. Another kind of character question about Mike Tyson that he talks about in the movie is the time he bit Evander Holyfield a couple of times in the ear,
yes,
during a match. And, you know, Tyson says that Holyfield was headbutting him, which is, you know, against the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so angry at the referee for not doing anything to stop him and to intervene that he just kind of bit him twice. I'm wondering, as someone who followed his career so closely, did you see that match?
I did.
Is he right that can you see in the video that he's being headbutted?
I've watched that fight a number of times, and I see Holyfield's head come forward in a way that it generally does. It did not, to me, seem egregious. It did not seem a case where he was purposely propelling his head in a way to injure Mike Tyson. That was my perspective from outside the ring. It was also the perspective of the referee, Mills Lane, one of the best championship fight referees in America at that time. But again, he's on the inside of it. I think what I really see from Tyson as much as anything else is a level of frustration. In some ways, and it's unfortunate to say this, but in some ways, Tyson's career is marked early on by him being sort of the schoolyard bully. He intimidated people. Evander Holyfield is not a guy who's going to be intimidated by anybody. If you lace up your shoes and gloves the same way he does and walk those same three steps to get into the ring, he cannot be afraid of you or intimidated by you. And I think one of the frustrating things that happened to Tyson in that fight was that he could not quite solve Evander Holyfield. And that, to me, is very much a factor in the level of frustration and anger he was feeling.
So I haven't asked you yet. What did you think of James Toback's movie, Tyson? What did you think of the portrait that Tyson presents?
Well, I'm surprised that I found it as revealing as it was. He didn't say anything that I haven't heard him say before in one form or another, but something about having it all together at that way and hearing it again from him made it revealing for me, even though sometimes revealing only in nuance, but those nuances are so important. For instance, he talked more about fear than I've ever heard him talk about before, at least to me. Now, I've read that he's admitted to some fear in certain situations, but fear was actually an almost overriding kind of an aura almost for him, and I find that interesting. I don't trust fighters who don't have any fear. I think that's unrealistic. But to hear him own as much fear as he did, I thought was interesting. Not just
and
in
it
the
sounds
ring.
Like fear motivated him from the very start, because
exactly.
He was bullied as a kid. He was
exactly.
Fat and he was bullied.
Yeah, and I've heard Riddick Bowe, who was went on to become a heavyweight champion and came from and lived at some point in the same neighborhood in Brownsville. He told me one time, he said, yeah, I remember Tyson. He was a fat kid. He was always disheveled. His clothes looked funny. He said, we called him Bummy Ike.
Mm.
So it's the irony of the two of them ending up where they did from that beginning is incredible.
Did the movie change your opinion of Tyson at all as a boxer or as a man?
As a man, I have to say he was a somewhat more sympathetic character to me in the ring. I have to add that in part the reason for that is when I was covering him, there's only so much sympathy, if you will, that I could allow to be a factor in how I saw him. You know, I had to take a more objective view. Being this far removed sort of softens to some extent my sort of recollections of him. But he just seemed more human. He seemed more mature, more adult, more reflective than I remember him being at the time. It had to be awfully tough to live out that sort of saga of Mike Tyson.
Elmer Smith, thank you so much for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure.
Elmer Smith is a columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News and a member of the editorial board. The new movie Tyson was directed by James Toback, who we heard from earlier.